the healing power of music in channeling George Harrison, the former Beatle. He died in 2001. David Young, our guest, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. David Young started his musical career as a rock guitarist. He began playing the flute professionally, but became renowned for playing two flutes simultaneously, creating what many in the healthcare industry refer to as healing music. And David has now seen his music used in hospitals, wellness centers, alternative healing centers around the world. He has been a bit of a skeptic. Certainly the paranormal played no role in his life. And then a little over 2 years ago, he began channeling the late Beatle, George Harrison. So welcome to the program, David Young. Hi, David.
Hey, George. How are you today?
Good. Looking forward to this. My gosh. Well, and we'll talk about it in a couple of segments, the healing power of music and, of course, the channeling of George Harrison. But tell me, how in the heck can you play two flutes at the same time?
Well, it's kind of funny to say, but I put one in my left hand and the other one in my right hand. I mean, that's silly. I know. I can never resist that. But really, that's what I do. I play two Renaissance flutes. They're called recorders. And I played one at a time like a normal person for like 17 years before I started to play two. But when I play the two flutes at one time, the two flutes create what's called a triharmonic tone. It sounds like a buzz or a vibration. And when I do that, that vibration just kind of goes right inside the heart or the soul of the listener, and they don't realize that what this vibration is because it's not a normal thing to hear because most people don't play two flutes at one time, you know?
I was never musically inclined. I sing a lot, but I just could never get it. And the flute was the first instrument my parents tried to get me to play, and I just couldn't do it. I mean, so you've got to be gifted, David, and I applaud you for that.
Well, thanks, George. The truth of the matter is that I started playing it in third grade like every other kid in school, and I was the worst in my class for the whole year. And at the end of the year, by some miracle, the teacher came to us and said, we have more money in the budget, so you guys can have a second year of the recorder if you'd like. And so we were like, well, I guess so. Why not, you know? And so during that second year, I started getting the hang of it. And by the time that second year was over, I was really good at it. And it's kind of almost like a miracle because I've never met anybody in my whole life that had 2 years of the recorder in school. I mean, when you had it in school, did you have it for 1 year?
1 year. That was it. Yeah.
And so it must have been some divine planning for this because otherwise I would have never, you know, I wouldn't even have gotten good at it, let alone sell a million CDs of recorder music, you know?
And you're a rock guitarist, and you get a kick out of this, David. One of our dear friends, Billy Gibbons, of course, from ZZ Top.
ZZ Top, yeah.
I think he's probably one of the greatest guitarists alive today.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
He once told me that he thought the best guitarist ever was Jimi Hendrix.
You know, Jimi Hendrix, he just took it to a whole nother level. It's kind of interesting because everybody sounded sort of similar before Jimi Hendrix came along, and he just took the electric guitar into this cosmic place that I don't think anybody had taken it to at that point. It's kind of interesting you bring that up because some people call me like the Jimi Hendrix of the flute because what I do with my flute just takes it to this whole spiritual, ethereal place, you know, that wouldn't be a normal thing for somebody to do with a flute, you know.
There is no doubt that listening to music impacts our mood, our well-being, our day, and it is unbelievable. How does that work on the brain, David?
Well, there's different levels of this. Like you know, like everything has a vibration and a frequency, and I have been making this music for like, seriously, for about 22 years when I finally figured out why my music has this profound effect on people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and It came to me actually while I was performing in Africa in front of 7,000 people who were meditating to my music. And the way I explain it is that when somebody is meditating, right, the first 10 minutes of your meditation, your thoughts are coming in very often, you know. But if you can stay in that meditation for 10 minutes, then you get to a level where there's a little bit more space in between your thoughts. And when we have that space in between our thoughts, that's when the great spirit, that cosmic energy, can come in, because we're allowing a little space in our mind, okay? And if you stay in that meditation for 20 minutes, then your thoughts are even further apart. And then that means we can take in that much more, two times or three times more of that cosmic energy, because we're making a space in our being for it to communicate with us. And if we stay in that meditation for 30 minutes, well, now the thoughts are really far apart. And so we can take in more and more than we would normally take in. And when I make my CDs, I don't stop mixing it. I'm not done with it until I get that buzz, that peace, that centeredness, that vibration that I feel after I've been meditating for 30 minutes. Okay? And I've been meditating for 20 or 30 minutes a day, once or twice a day, for 30 years. And so my frequency of my meditation, like after 30 minutes, that's what I put into my music, because it's not finished until I get that buzz of listening to it. And so that's why somebody can put on one of my CDs and within a minute they're having an out-of-body experience, they're seeing the inner light in their inner vision, or sometimes people have an experience where it just, this may sound bizarre, but I've had people tell me that it froze them, where their physical body just, they couldn't move because they were starting to experience this divine energy coming into them, and they didn't want to move, and they couldn't move because they wanted to just take that energy, and it was like a nirvana.
I think we may have lost you, Dave. You there? Yep, he is gone. So we'll try to get him back on. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do something while we're doing this, because this is something. I have got a copy, and it's on YouTube, of David playing two recorders at once. So we're going to take a little shot at this. And listen to this. He's playing Imagine with two flutes. That? Here you go. That's David playing his two recorders. Quite a thing. Now, do we got him back on yet, guys? All right, let's go to him. David, you back with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep. Let's speak up, though. You got to speak up real loud.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. I was just playing about 2 minutes of your rendition off of YouTube.
Oh, okay.
All right, where did you go? You disappeared on me.
I disappeared. I'm on this phone, and the landline just disconnected, so quite sorry about that.
Okay, so we were talking about the healing power of music and how it works. How does it inspire people?
Well, I have different kinds of healing music. I have instrumental music that is just peaceful meditation music, and then I have also the musical affirmations that were George's idea for me to start creating, because he was into Hinduism for many, many years, and he studied meditation and yoga. And so mantras were very, very important in the Hindu religion, because they figured if they attached a positive word or a sentence to a melody, that once that melody was in people's minds, it would never go away. That's why, like, if you heard the words, let it be, it takes a second until your mind automatically clicks into that Beatles song, and you're hearing that melody with the words, let it be, connected to it, correct?
Yeah.
So with the Hindu mantras, they found positive sentences with a message that would be important to give people the chance to have a better life. Because if they could put something really positive into their mind, then they could help deal with the struggles of life. And so, because when this thing started with me, that with George and I, that I didn't initiate at all. I mean, I was a little too young to be a Beatles fan. As you said, I didn't believe in channeling at all. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I mean, I was afraid of ghosts, you know. So I had been meditating for a long time, and I had had beautiful spiritual experiences, but because I had some bad experiences with ghosts when I was a kid, I was just not comfortable with it, you know. And so I was going through a giant change in my life where I was, like, basically ending a 9-year relationship. I was losing kids and the whole thing, losing a $1 million home. It was like everything in my life was going into the shredder. And so I knew about affirmations, so I created an affirmation for myself. My mind is clear. My mind is calm. And so I kept saying it to myself. And because, you know, I'm a singer and a songwriter besides a flute player, I started singing it to myself. And then I thought, you know what, to help me get through this incredible shift that I'm going through right now in my life, I'm going to make a tape or a CD of me singing this to myself, like a lullaby to myself, with that mantra, my mind is clear, my mind is calm, singing it in a very soft melody. My mind is clear, my mind is calm, my mind is clear, my mind is calm. So that was blended into the background of my music, okay? And the more I listened to it, the more my mind picked up on that message. And every time I would hear it, my mind would naturally sing along, just like when you hear a song that you recognize the words and the melody, naturally sing along. And I found that our minds can only have one thought at a time. You can have a positive thought for 10 seconds and then have a negative thought for 10 seconds if you choose to do that. But you can only have one thought at a time. So while I was listening to that, the music was almost hypnotizing my mind because it was focusing my mind on something positive. And so as long as I was focused on that positive thought and the music perpetuated it, it kept me positive. It kept me from worrying and having anxiety about all the changes that I was going through in my life. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Now, if good music, and I'll call what you do good music, heals, what about bad music or what I would call noise? What does that do? Does that have the opposite effect on people?
Well, this is a debatable thing that we can talk about here, but if just look at it, if a positive affirmation like my mind is clear, my mind is calm, when we sing that to ourselves or listen to that, our body relaxes because it's hearing the mind say it's clear and it's calm, everything is fine. So your neck muscles and your shoulder muscles, you relax. You just naturally unwind a little bit. But if you were singing to yourself the opposite of my mind is clear, my mind is calm, then that would just add more negative energy into your body, because our mind secretes these enzymes that are either happy enzymes, like everything's wonderful, or fight or flight enzymes, and which tense us up and, you know, make the blood rush to our, you know, extremities and, you know, makes us all freaked out and full of anxiety. And so even though I played heavy metal for a great deal of my life, and there's a time to have fun with heavy metal music, there's no doubt about it. But for me, I personally think that it's not as healthy for somebody to listen to something really negative a lot, because your body reacts to it whether you like it or not. Those words,
it should tear you apart after a while, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, the words have an influence on us, you know. And but, you know, if AC/DC comes on the radio and I'm in my car, I turn it up as loud as it'll go just because it's so fun. You know what I mean? But I wouldn't do that for more than 5 minutes. You know, I wouldn't want that kind of energy going, having an effect on me. You know what I mean?
Is the resonance, David, of the music, does that have an effect on you?
Oh, without a doubt. When I actually, when I listen to my own music, it's like I'm listening to somebody else. And especially now, since George creates these CDs with me, it's kind of like listening to someone else, because the guitar ends up sounding more like him than it does me. And so it's kind of, it's unique. I get to be the listener. You know, even though it's my hands that his soul and my soul are using to create this music, I'm open to it. I'm finally comfortable with it, and I've accepted this job. And, you know, he was a super spiritual guy, even though I knew very little about him when this all started in 2010.
Now, what do you say to people who would say, come on, George Harrison, you're channeling him, come on? What do you say to them?
Well, I say that, number one, I don't channel George Harrison in the way where I don't ever sit in front of an audience and say, well, George wants me to tell you this right now.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't ever do that. What the first 3 years of this whole experience was basically him trying to get through to me that he was connected to me, because I didn't believe in channeling. I was afraid of ghosts, and I wasn't a Beatles fan, you know? So
why pick you?
Well, there's a lot of reasons why he picked me, but is it okay if we just talk about some of the elements of how my process was, so your listeners can hear this process and kind of go experience it along with me and then see how it developed, instead of me just saying why he picked me right now?
Now, when you talk about process, though, you're talking about what? How he got to contact you, or did you contact him? How did that happen?
No, I never contacted him. I never contacted him.
You probably wouldn't even think about it, right?
Never. I wouldn't ever think of that. I didn't believe in channeling. I thought that anybody could say, oh, this message is coming through. How could you prove it? But the unique thing about my experience is that it documents and chronicles my experience from being a complete non-believer in channeling, afraid of ghosts, to actually having an interdimensional relationship with George.
And did you feel that process coming along? Did that take years for you to develop?
Absolutely. It took 3 years of this stuff happening once a month in such bizarre ways that you just couldn't believe it. You know, that's what my whole book is about. It's the story of how I didn't believe in this stuff. And some really bizarre things happened. Like, the first two things that happened is that, you know, I told you I ended that 9-year relationship. I was moving from...
Well, hold on, David. We're going to take this break, and we're going to come right back and find out a little bit more about how this all happened to you. Well, listening to George Harrison, you can stay connected with iHeartRadio as well. And I'm talking about listening to thousands of the best stations across the United States. Simply pick up and download the free app. It's iHeartRadio app. You can do that, or you can also listen to iHeartRadio.com and have some fun doing it that way, too. And you can also listen to our program so you never miss anything, too, if you're away from your radio. Simply pick up the app, iHeartRadio, in the stores. We'll be back. Welcome back. David Young with us. Gosh, lots to talk with you about, David, about the healing. But let's go back into the George Harrison channeling. So how did this happen? As you were building yourself up to this, what happened? Because you weren't expecting it, obviously.
Oh, man. That's for sure. It was so out of the blue. What happened was that I left Minneapolis. I was driving across the country, and I was feeling so terrible. So I said this little prayer to God. I said, God, give me something to listen to that's going to make me feel better. And I randomly picked one disc, one CD, out of a stack of about 50 CDs, and it happened to be a CD I really hadn't listened to a lot. I had got it as a Christmas present, and it was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and I thought, well, this is appropriate, you know, because I just ended a 9-year relationship, you know. And as I was listening to the CD, when song number 8 came, it was George Harrison's song, Within You Without You, and the sitar, and it was so beautiful and ethereal. And when the song ended, I just hit repeat, and I hit repeat on that for 3 hours, just over and over again. And I did this for 2 or 3 weeks, the whole way, for 3 weeks, actually, as I was driving back to the East Coast, and I had to stop in Chicago to do some concerts and stuff. When I get back to the East Coast, I went to visit a friend that I hadn't seen in 25 years. I used to give him guitar lessons when I was in high school, and he was in junior high school. And he had heard that I had got a little famous and wanted to get together with me, so I figured if I'm moving back to the East Coast, I'll go see this guy. So when I get to his house, sitting on his television set was a DVD of the concert for Bangladesh. And being that I didn't know anything about George Harrison other than he was in the Beatles, he was friends with Eric Clapton, and he had something to do with the concert for Bangladesh. So I said, can we watch this while we chat? So we watched this whole thing, and I get my first insight into, you know, what kind of guy George was, as much as you could from watching this concert video. The very next day, for the first time in 20 years of doing 40 shows a year, 40 weekends in different cities all over the United States, actually all over the world, right? I had never carpooled with anybody. And for some bizarre reason, I decided to carpool with another artist who, oddly enough, was famous for making drawings of John Lennon's face. That's what his fame was, you know? So I get to this guy's white van that was parked at his house outside of Princeton, New Jersey. I put my CDs, my flutes, my clothes in the back of his white van, and I sit down in the passenger seat of his van, and sitting on the dashboard is a cassette tape of the concert for Bangladesh. And I was freaked out, because this was 24 hours after I had seen this friend I hadn't seen in 25 years.
It's the magic of synchronicity, David, isn't it? Unbelievable.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So I was like, because I was freaked out, I said, what the heck is this thing doing here? You know, and he said, well, I went to the concert for Bangladesh in 1971. I bought 2 tickets for $3.50 each, and I had those 2 ticket stubs and this cassette tape in a box in my attic since the early 70s. And I took that tape out this morning just to listen to on the drive today. That the tape had been in that box for 37 years.
I mean, it's like thinking of somebody and they call you after 10 years or something like that. It's got that kind of synchronicity to it. It really does.
Yeah, it was bizarre. So for the 3-hour drive that we went down to Baltimore, I stared at this thing thinking, what the heck is going on here? You know, so nothing happened for 3 months. And every once in a while, I would wonder, what was that all about? You know, 3 months later, I moved down to a suburb of Philadelphia near New Hope, Pennsylvania. And one of my friends who I had just met invited me out to play football. I went out to play football. There was a woman who was playing football with us, and that was a first, you know.
And a lingerie bowl or something.
I would have been in for the lingerie bowl, that's for sure. But, you know, and she wasn't my typical type, that a woman that I was attracted to. You know, she was taller than me. I mean, it wasn't like, you know what I mean? How we all have a type, you know?
This wasn't love at first sight, you're saying.
Yeah, correct. And so, but we were having such a fun time. I said, hey, you want to have dinner? And she said, well, I have to teach a yoga class first. And I'm like, oh my God, I sell yoga music to thousands of yoga studios all over. And I had done yoga 3 or 4 times a week for 90 minutes in 90 degree heat.
Yeah.
So I'm all in, you know? So she says, why don't you meet me at the yoga class? So I met her at the yoga class. And anyway, we started dating. And on my third date with her, she asked me what the highlight of my career was. And I said it was in 1999 when Paul McCartney started a standing ovation for me at this event where I was hired to play for his daughter, Heather, who was a designer. And then she said to me, well, did you know that George Harrison used to babysit me?
Wow. How cool.
Now, we were sitting. Yeah, tell me. We were sitting in a coffee shop. There were people sitting right next to me. I instantly flashed back to those 2 weird things that happened with the concert for Bangladesh DVD and the tape. And I'm thinking, this has got to be connected. I mean, what are the chances of this, you know?
Yeah.
So she starts, yeah. So I, as cool as I could, because, you know, we were just starting to date, and I didn't want to, like, jump up and down.
You didn't want to seem too strange at this point, right?
Yeah, and I didn't want to say anything to her about it either, because, you know, I didn't know how she would respond to that, you know? And so she said, well, my mom and biological dad, we're going to this yoga ashram in Tucson, Arizona. Remember the Beatles had that song, JoJo Left Us Home in Tucson, Arizona?
Yeah.
Well, that's where the Beatles used to vacation, because back in the early 70s, Tucson was like a remote city. It wasn't a very popular place with millions of people, and it was a place where the Beatles could go and have privacy.
Yeah.
And that was the most important commodity at that point for them, to have privacy and not get chased around, you know, because it was dangerous. You know,
oh, wherever they went, there were like thousands of people, right?
For sure. I mean, when they came to New York the first time, they were at that that hotel. I can't remember the name of it, but there were 200,000 people outside the hotel waiting for them. And then when they went to Australia the first time, there were 500,000 people outside their hotel. That's twice as many people than were at Woodstock, were waiting outside their hotel. So Tucson was a perfect place for them to vacation. And so George was going to the same yoga ashram as her mom. And when her mom and biological dad split up, she and George got together. They started dating. After 2 months, they fell in love. And then George moved her and her mom to England, and she grew up in his castle.
He moved them to England. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So she was a little girl. So he used to babysit her when she was a little girl.
Huh.
So what? I mean, it just blew my mind. And so I, you know, I liked her before she told me this. And then when she told me this, it was like, wow, this has got to be a connection.
Yeah, you were really connected on that one.
For sure. And the logical part of myself was thinking, well, okay, she had been through a couple of really rough relationships that did not end the way she wanted them to end. And she was a beautiful woman. And she actually had won The Bachelor, the TV show The Bachelor, about 5 years ago. And but it really killed her confidence, and she was really afraid of starting a relationship again. But when she and I were together, there was this energy. She could feel it, I could feel it, but she just really wasn't ready to start a relationship. And I had never experienced that before, because I was with my ex for 9 years, you know, and I loved being in a relationship, you know. And before that, my previous girlfriend I was with for 7 years. So I had never dated a woman that had been hurt so bad that she was afraid to, you know, to start a relationship.
Well, at this point, David, were you aware that maybe the spirit of George Harrison was doing all these things?
Well, I thought about it a little bit. It made sense to me. But it wasn't until, okay, so I started writing songs for this woman. And once I started writing songs about this woman and for her, I couldn't stop. It was relentless. It was crazy. I wrote and recorded 25 songs in 30 days. I mean, when I say recorded, this was with words and drums and bass and electric guitars.
You were nuts about her.
I really was. But there was one set of lyrics that I had written that no matter what I did, no music was coming together for it. And it was so bizarre, because everything else was written in like 15 minutes. I would have an idea of one thing I wanted to say to her. In a minute, it was a melody. And 15 minutes later, it was a completed song. And then I would go to this recording studio that just was always available for some unknown reason. But this one lyric, it was a very unique lyric. It was different from all the other lyrics. The words were, I wish I really knew what life was all about, why some people have so much and others live without. And if I ever understand all the struggles I've been through, then maybe I'll understand why I'm still missing you. I wish I really knew why this world had so much pain, and why we live and why we die and then do it all again. And if I ever understand all the struggles I've been through, then maybe I'll understand why I'm still missing you. Those words sat on my nightstand on a piece of paper for 2 weeks. And it mystified me, because every day I'd wake up and I'd see it and I'd try to write some music for it. Nothing would come together for it. So after 2 weeks, and while I'm dating her in this process, I wake up in the middle of the night. I get this nudge to pick up those that piece of paper with those words. So it's 3 o'clock in the morning, absolute silence in the apartment where I was staying. And I pick up those words. I'm sitting in my bed, and I say to myself out loud, I said, how in the world is the music supposed to go for these words? Frustrated a little bit. And at the exact moment when I said that, this spirit appeared in my room about 5 feet off to the right, right next to my bed, and this spirit played guitar. And the music that it played went perfect with those words. And we wrote that song together.
And you remembered it, I guess.
Right? Yeah, I did, because I recorded it on my tape deck, and because I didn't want to lose it. And obviously that was my first time ever writing a song with one of the Beatles. Have you ever written one of those songs, your songs with a Beatle? Because that was my first time.
Now, when you said you recorded it, you recorded the spirit playing that song, or you doing it?
No, I recorded myself playing it with those words after he taught me how the guitar should go.
Okay, so you had to run for the guitar, I guess, right away or something like that.
Yeah, my guitar was right next to me in the bed.
Okay, so you duplicated what you heard, right?
Right, and then I recorded it, and then I fell asleep. The next day, I called up the studio. I said, I have a new song. I went into the studio to record it, and the way you record a song is you do what's called the guide track, where you play the guitar from the beginning to the end of the song, and you play it with a drum beat, and then you add different instruments in different sections. You know, you got the voice here, the harmonies on the chorus, whatever it would be. And so while I was playing the guide track, my headphones are on, I'm playing the guitar, and I had this thought. This music sounds just like something George Harrison would have played. And at that exact moment when I had that thought, this light appeared in my room, and this light was about 3 feet in circumference. It was in a circle, and there was a star in the middle of it, and it had this blue light like you would see at the airport on the runway lights, and it was sparkling and shining, and it hovered right next to me for 6 seconds while I was playing the guitar with the headphones on, playing to the drums, and it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen, the most spiritual thing that ever happened in my life, because I've had spiritual experiences where you see like that little flash of light that maybe happens a half a second.
Yeah.
But six seconds is like Close Encounters of the George kind. You know what I'm saying? It was unbelievable, you know?
Was it floating around, or was it stationary?
No, it was stationary. Okay. It just stayed right there in front of me off to my right. And oddly enough, it was like the same place off to my right as the previous night when he was off to my right. You know, like, let's say, like at 2 o'clock from where I was. Do you know what I mean? Like off to your right, where your right hand would go straight out. And so I knew that was my confirmation that George really is a part of, he's in my life. And he's trying to get something through to me, and I'm just blown away. I'd never seen anything like that. So after I was done with that, I doubled the guitar part because I wanted to change the sound, like make it a stereo sound, and then I tripled it. Now, for a guitar player to triple a part, that's about as far as you go. Nobody ever plays more than 3 times through with the same part with 3 different sounds. I did this thing 12 times because I wasn't happy with the sound. The engineer thought I was out of my mind, okay? So finally I said, I'm still not happy with this. I said, can I use one of your guitars? Because he was a guitar collector. He had 150 guitars from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Yeah. I said, can I use one of yours? He said, sure, what do you want to use? And I said, I don't know. Pick me one, but I just want it to sound clear like a bell. He brings me this guitar back in this old case that looked like it had been in the ocean for 3 years. It was completely falling apart. He puts the case at my feet and opens it up. And I said, well, what is this thing? He said, this is a 1955 Gretsch. I said, well, what is it called? You know, guitars have names like Les Pauls or Stratocasters.
Yeah.
He said, this is the George Harrison model because it's the exact guitar that George played in the Beatles, except this one's actually 3 years older than the one he played. And so it's so rare, maybe there's 50 of them in the whole world left. I plugged in that guitar. It was the exact sound that I've been trying to create the whole time.
It was just what you wanted.
Yeah. And so I guess, you know, George wanted to have his guitar sound.
Now, to this day, David, is it still happening, all these George Harrison events?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. The only difference is that it happens on a daily basis now, where then things would happen like about once a month. Like I had those three things happen in that one 24-hour period that I called the three miracles that I never got to tell her his stepdaughter just because, you know, the relationship with her didn't work out. And she had such a hard time trusting anybody. She would have never believed me, you know. And I thought that whole relationship with her was only because George wanted her to be happy, and he knew that I really cared for her, and he knew I was a good guy, and I was going to be good to her. And I thought this whole thing was about her. So when the thing ended with her, I thought, well, this is it. George, he's not going to have anything to do with me, because I thought he was only in this thing to help her. And so when it ended, I was like really, really sad, because, you know, I'd fallen in love with her. It's been a 2-month thing. And, you know, every time we got close, she would back off, and then we'd get together again. And, you know, it was just like the cycle of heartbreak, which was the right. last thing that I needed.
So it wasn't clicking for you at all, was it?
No, but it was just undeniable every time that we were together that there was this extra energy in the room. And the normal thing to think would be that energy was a chemistry between you and a person. It wouldn't be a normal thing to think that George Harrison is in the room with you because he has a connection with both of you and wants to see this work out for both of you. I mean, have you ever thought that when you liked a woman, that thinking one of the Beatles is involved? You know what I'm saying?
No, I've never done that.
Yeah, I had never done that either. And so when the thing finally ended, it was, you know, I had recorded all of these songs. I mean, my life had just, it had kind of spun into this out of control thing. And so I was in meditation and I was trying to get out of this sadness I was in. And George came into my meditation. He reached out his hand to me. When his right hand touched my right hand, this electricity went into my hand, went through my hand, up into my heart center, filled my whole body. And I woke up 2 hours later.
That's dramatic. And to this day, he still visits you, basically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, whether it's, you know, an electronic handshake, which it's not really necessary now because I'm doing great now. You know what I mean? Emotionally and, you know, right. That terrible time that was over. But a unique thing happened like a month later after that. I moved to Florida. I'll just cut to the chase about the painting. And so I was dating this woman who was a painter, and I couldn't draw. I would never think of drawing or making a painting because I could never do anything. I couldn't even make a good stick figure, you know. And one day I got this nudge that I should make a painting. And so she had this painting under the bed in the spare bedroom where I kept my guitars that was 6 gray triangles, and the painting was 3 feet by 4 feet. And the first time I saw that painting, I knew something was going to happen with that. So I asked her about it. And she says, well, I worked on...
Well, we've lost him again. David Young, channeling Harrison, book number 1.